Remakers Mark, Episode 34, Saving Private Ryan. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remakers Mark. Here we are in Episode 34, where we are discussing the 1998 gritty war drama, Saving Private Ryan. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you, and what is your favorite war movie?
I didn't even think about the question. I am wonderful. I'll say Tora, Tora, Tora.
Ooh, Tora, Tora, Torrance.
Tony, nice. Tony, Tony.
Wasn't Tora, Tora, Torrance a Minneapolis band? Am I remembering that right?
Okay, yeah, they're a local band.
Got it. Okay, cool. Excellent. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you, and what is your favorite war movie?
I am doing fairly adequate, and I would say my favorite war movie is Apocalypse Now.
Ooh, yep. Good pick. Tough to watch, kind of like this one, but well
it's
worth
not
it.
Lighthearted.
It's not one you go to at the end of the day to wind down.
No.
At all.
No.
Ever. Lee Howitzer, how are you, and what is your favorite war movie? Don't say Band of Brothers.
I'm doing well, and since that's off the table, I'll say Black Hawk Down.
All right. Good one. Sorry to take your pick. Technically, it's a miniseries anyways.
Right.
So I just wanted to flip you for real.
It's not a war movie. It's a miniseries.
So, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Mark Josting, how are you, and what is your favorite war movie?
I'm great, thanks. And my favorite war movie? Probably 300.
Ooh, that's a good one. Just sort of a non-trad, not a World War II movie, but war nonetheless.
It's a war movie. It's just an ancient war.
It is. And like all war movies, rife with slow motion.
Yes.
Yes. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host this fine evening. And my favorite war movie is Paths of Glory, the Stanley Kubrick sort of pretty anti-war movie. It's from the 60s? Yeah, I think so. It's really good. If you haven't seen it, boy howdy, should you. All right, so before we begin our discussion of Saving Private Ryan, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. New from Modern Antics, Riddle Room 2, The Starship, a live room escape game and interactive puzzle set on a fully immersive starship. Participants have 1 hour to solve a series of increasingly challenging puzzles before time runs out. To find out more and purchase tickets, check them out at riddle-room.com or on Facebook at Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now, Andy, why don't you give us a summary of the film, and then we'll get into our history of it as well.
Sure. Saving Private Ryan is the fictional tale of a World War II squadron of Army Rangers mission to find a single soldier and send him home after his three brothers were killed in action. This 1998 film directed by Steven Spielberg depicts the invasion of Normandy in very graphic and reportedly accurate terms, showing us that war is hell. My history with the film specifically was that my college roommate and I saw it in the theater. The theater was full, if I remember correctly, because this movie had a lot of buzz leading up to it. It was a very anticipated movie, and we saw it in the summer, so it must have been a summer blockbuster. And the movie itself, if you're familiar with the movie at all, you know that it's an incredibly difficult film to watch. When the movie was over and the credits had come through and the lights had come on, no one spoke and no one moved. And we just sat there kind of as a corporate body for a minute or two and just kind of catching our breath and pondering what we just experienced. It was easily the most difficult movie going experience I've ever had. Lee, tell us about your experience.
I actually wish I could have experienced that the same way you did. I saw it as a matinee, so it was like me and maybe 10 other people in the theater at the time. But I remember it. I remember having a very visceral reaction to it. I picked this one just because I think it's an important movie for people to see to understand, I guess, what it looked like during World War II. I interviewed a World War II veteran a few years ago, and when we were talking about war movies, he was saying how he hated war movies. He was just going on about, oh, that movie Patton is just terrible. It's not accurate at all. And all this stuff. And he said, the only movie that I've ever seen that even comes close is Saving Private Ryan. And this is a veteran of the 2nd Armored Division who came ashore on Omaha Beach on D+1. So
wow.
I took his word for it.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, I saw this movie in the theater as well. I think it was fairly sparsely attended. I think it was somewhere in between you guys, but I had basically the same experience, which was, you know, everyone at the end just kind of let out a collective sigh, you know, and kind of had a deep breath. I think it feels like you're holding your breath pretty much for the entire thing, but the last,
yeah, that's a good way to put it,
45 minutes or so, especially. But yeah, the first half hour and the last 45 minutes are just, man, something else. And we'll definitely touch on that.
When my wife and I watched this again for the podcast, it was equally as difficult an experience, but this time I was much more aware of my own, like how my own body was reacting to it. And there were, especially for the last 45 minutes, the first half hour actually to me was much easier to watch. But the last battle, my heart was pounding. I was sweating. I could just feel my whole body just clenching.
Yeah.
Oh,
blah, blah, blah. Yep.
Then I had to watch a Disney movie afterwards just to kind of wash it off me.
Yeah. So I just bought a house pretty recently. We've been here for just shy of 2 months now. And I finally, we renovated the basement. So that took about 5-6 weeks. And so I just set up the home theater downstairs. So like everything's been moved and set up and I wired it for surround sound and everything. So this was the first movie that we watched in the whole setup. And I mean, it's, you know, from a filmmaking perspective, it's extraordinary, but I mean, it was just like, yeah, it was visceral to say the least. So yeah. Well, we'll definitely touch on a lot of these things in part two and probably a little bit here in part one. So in part one of the discussion here, we are going to recast the movie as usual. And we've got three major characters and five minor characters to discuss here. The first major character is Corporal Upham. So Lee, tell us about Corporal Upham.
Upham is the group's translator and occasional voice of reason. He is unexpectedly pulled into the worst parts of the war he hoped to avoid in order to assist in the retrieval of Private Ryan. When I was going through actors trying to think of someone appropriate to cast in this role, I kept on thinking that Corporal Upham doesn't belong on a battlefield. He has absolutely no business on a battlefield. He doesn't even know how to carry his rifle. And I wanted someone who had more of an intellectual presence and would look equally as awkward in a combat situation. So I picked Andrew Garfield.
I thought about him.
Yeah, that's a good pick. You know, it speaks volumes to him that this is a guy that played Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like he's played the epitome of physicality, but you're picking him for what is ultimately a pretty meek character and a pretty, he has some very challenging, very cowardice moments or moments of cowardice. So that speaks to him pretty greatly.
Yeah. And thinking of, you know, his character in The Social Network, you know, he was sort of a put upon character in that as well. Like just not a terribly charismatic or powerful person. And that's just how I saw the character of Corporal Upham.
Yeah, I had a hard time. The first time I saw this, I think I've probably seen this movie three times just recently. The first time, I didn't remember Upham too much. The second time, I really disliked this performance. And this time, I think I came around on it. I think I like it overall. There are moments that I think he's a little too Woody Allen, maybe. And so I wanted to try to move away from that a little bit. But overall, like the performance itself was good. I think Garfield would balance that really nicely.
I agree.
Not too neurotic, but just enough.
Right. But moving on to Kyle.
Yeah, so sort of thinking along those lines, I wanted somebody that sort of maintained that sense of, you know, kind of a small individual in terms of what he's been through. You know, he's a interpreter, translator, you know, hasn't seen a lot of battle. And he says as much from the get-go. I mean, this is not a surprise. So it's not as though he didn't try to warn them that he might not be very good in combat. But I wanted somebody that wasn't quite as neurotic as Jeremy Davies, but was a little bit less, but still had that very thin, very small feel. And so I went with Jay Baruchel. I think he's often done comedy, but I think he can do drama really well. And I think you know, the scene that I most closely associate with this character is when after they meet up and they're kind of walking to the next destination, he's asking questions of everybody and they're all kind of razzing him. Like, I could see Baruchel just nailing that scene. I love that scene overall. That was the one that I kind of honed in on for this character, as far as him sort of being gullible, but kind of not at the same time, and really getting a lot of gruff from all the other soldiers. So Jay Baruchel is who I went with.
It's nice. I like that. I can see him also being terrified, and
yeah.
But especially when the other members of the platoon sort of mock him a little bit, that's Upham sort of shakes it off. It doesn't really land that much on him. Yeah. And I think that Jay Baruchel would do that really well.
Yeah, well put. Thank you. Good supporting evidence of my pick. Did better than I did.
Not going to vote for you, but you know.
I have some umbrage with it, but enough. I can't put my finger on it. Why?
Yeah, it's just a little off.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know. It'll come to me.
I think this is one where you would see it and be like, or you would see it on paper and think, and then you'd see it on screen and be like, okay, I got that.
I could see him in this movie, but I would picture him as more of the kind of razzing Brooklynite tough guy soldier, even though he is kind of a scrawny, slight guy. But
so you would see him as Ryben?
No, well, kind of a mix between Ryben and Milish, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but you know.
Yeah, I could see him doing that too, but I would most like to see him.
But I think he could definitely do, based role. On his voice work and his characters in How to Train Your Dragon. That character's kind of along the same line, maybe not quite as extreme, but yeah. Kind of nice guy, slightly passive, quirky, you know, not a soldier kind of a way. So it could work. It could work.
I get you. So what is your pick, Andy? You're up next.
Mine's gonna be. Yeah, I like my pick. I don't know if anyone else will, though.
Hate it.
All right. Moving on to...
Preemptive
hate. I picked Zach Woods, who you may not recognize by name.
Hate it.
But
Umbridge.
But he was in... he had a recurring role in The Office towards the end of that series, and is in Silicon Valley, if anyone's seen that.
He's Jared, right?
In Silicon Valley, he is, yes, Jared. Donald Jared Dunn.
Yeah.
He is... Those two characters are very similar to each other in that they're very kind of mousy, a little socially inept, not picking up on the cues of others at all. And I like that aspect of his performances there. Now, he's a comic actor by most of his body of work, but I can very much see him take that kind of angle into the character at the start when we first meet him. But quickly become terrified in combat. Like we see in the performance, like when they take that machine gun nest and he stays back and he's kind of watching through that little handheld scope, and you can see that he's terrified of what's going on. Like that's the first sign that we see of how truly out of place he is. And I like that. And I think especially Zach Woods is tall. He's like 6'4". He's a big, he's a very lanky framed guy. So I could see this character trying to make himself as small as possible, you know, despite his own physical size. What I like about this character, I like slash hated. I hated it kind of in the moment, but looking back on it, I can see why it evoked such a strong emotion in me, which I think makes it a good character, was in the last battle scene, how he completely flakes out and becomes just paralyzed by fear. And, you know, kind of in the eyes of probably his colleagues becomes a coward, but really in the eyes of humanity, like, just succumbs to the horror that he's being surrounded by. And he's not used to this. And he does it. And by doing it, you know, really leads to the death of one of his comrades. We'll get to that later. I could see Zach Woods just kind of just sinking into that kind of almost like screaming, you know, in terror and in fear in that one. So that's why I'm with Zach Woods.
Yeah. Not to describe Silicon Valley as equivalent to war, but there are some scenes in Silicon Valley where he gets picked on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically his entire persona is getting picked on, and yet he is like the sweetest guy in that, and you just root for him. And so like you laugh, but not at his expense. Like you kind of want him to get the one up, and when he doesn't necessarily get the one up, but he is just so sweet that you're like, aw,
well,
that guy.
He's like, just yeah, well, like, I think he would totally do Lee, that. I think Lee, you said it, maybe it was you, Kyle, but like the insults toward Colonel Upham never land. Like they just roll right off his back. And I think that's the same way with this character on Silicon Valley. Like they are clearly mocking him or just ignoring him, but he just plows right on. He's optimistic. He's positive. And I like that aspect of it. And I like to see that in Colonel Upham. Corporal Upham.
Nice.
Corporal.
let's not give him too much credit here.
He just gave him a huge promotion.
For shooting that one guy. All right. Mark.
Yes.
Tell us of your Colonel Up Yours. Upham. Upham.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I was looking for many of the same things. I wanted to focus on the, I guess, the nerdiness, you know, the being an academic on the field of battle, the awkwardness that Lee mentioned, not holding the rifle correctly, and yeah, just being able to crumble and then, you know, stand up again and shoot a dude. So I went with Miles Teller. We would know him very recently from the new Fantastic Four films, also mm-hmm. from the Divergent series, but especially from Whiplash, where he's the main character Andrew Nyman, for which he was nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And the casting agents for Fantastic Four agree with me on this one that he can do a pretty mean nerdy, and I really like that fish out of water aspect that he could bring to this role.
He's going to be Reed Richards, right?
Yeah. He's going to be Reed
that's
Richards.
An interesting stretch going from Reed Richards to nerdy soldier.
Yeah. I can see it, though. But
I think it's kind of exactly the same, just more stretchiness.
Fair enough.
I have a lot to say about the Fantastic
Four movies.
He's
very young, though, too.
Yeah, he is young. Let me see.
I guess he's 28. Well, yeah. But he seems young. He's a baby face.
That seems about right.
It does seem about right.
Yeah, I haven't seen Whiplash, and I'm excited to see Fantastic Four, so I don't know him well, but I like the look of it. He's a little beefy, maybe, but he could also pair
really.
That back. Really?
No, nope,
not
really.
Like beefy, but not. No. But he's not. He doesn't look.
Yeah, he's not a stick figure.
Yeah, yeah. So we maybe starve him a little bit coming in, but yeah, I like it.
Yeah, yeah, and you should see Whiplash at least for the drumming.
Yeah,
that's a. If he's not really playing the drums in that movie, it's easily the best fake playing I've ever seen.
Cool. I've heard good things about the editing of balancing between his scene and or his playing and when they did have a stunt drummer, a second drummer, I guess. I don't know what it's called. But yeah, so I really would like to see that, but just haven't done so yet.
Yeah.
I'll edit to my cue.
So that's my pick, Miles Teller, for playing the drum, for Corporal Upham. And next up is Jer.
Thank you. I was actually focusing on the aspect of Corporal Upham that is that he basically becomes our narrative eyes for a lot of it. He is the untrained soldier. He's the one that's out of place for the majority of the film, much like we are. And so he kind of becomes our narrative hold, even though it's kind of being narrated by other people for the most part, but he kind of becomes our unbiased observer or what have you. And so I was looking for somebody that was going to have that sort of meekness and humanity to them. And so I chose Emil Hirsch.
I can see that.
Yep. He's a strong presence when he needs to be, but he can also be pretty paired back too. So yeah, I could totally see that.
I think that he would be convincing enough as somebody who made it into the army, but also convincing enough as somebody who really doesn't belong in the position where he is. And I think he could really make the transition at the end and just the how war just kind of beats him down. It would be a very tragic showing of that, just like it was in the original. Like that was one of the more depressing parts of the whole movie, is just watching Corporal Upham just kind of basically give up and let the horrors of war kind of beat him down and mm-hmm. win.
Yeah, very well put.
That's the product of not enough training.
Yeah. Mm. And being human.
Yep.
I have a feeling I would probably be, I'd be a lot more Upham than Miller if I were out in a battlefield. Well, I'd probably be a lot more dead than any of them, but that being said. All right. So the role of Corporal Upham, originally played by Jeremy Davies. Lee went with Andrew Garfield. I went with Jay Baruchel. Andy went with Zach Woods. Mark went with Miles Teller. And Jer went with Emil Hirsch. Up next is the titular Private Ryan, originally played by Matt Damon. Private James Francis Ryan is the rarely found MacGuffin turned real in this film, a goal, a source of frustration and sorrow, and ultimately a reflection of brotherhood. He represents hope and sadness for all of our characters. No pressure. This is a tough role to cast and to play because basically, like, you're casting America. It's like the entirety of America, like America military male, right? So, like, you have to find the guy that could be anybody's son, anybody's brother. You know what I mean? So, again, no pressure from that standpoint either. I had a really hard time doing that because that's a whole lot of shoes to fill. But I think I found a good one in Logan Lerman. We have spoken of him before. He's been in lots of things, like most notably The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which does not seem like a good landing point for this.
I can see some relevance there.
Yep. Percy Jackson, you know, so he's got some action cred in there. Three Musketeers as well. So I like his face. I think he's got a good, honest face. He could be from Hollywood. He could be from Iowa. You know, I mean, he could really play a lot of different types of characters. But most of all, he just looks real and believable as both a soldier and as, like, you know, American male at war. So
did anybody see Fury?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I saw that he's in that.
Yeah.
Eh?
I have not seen it either. But it seemed like Fury was trying very hard to be Saving Private Ryan to a degree.
It's okay.
It was a Saving Private Ryan and Glorious Bastards combo.
Hmm.
Somewhat. It's okay. I mean, it has its moments. Like. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll still see it. Jer, on to you. Who is your Private Ryan?
I had a hard time with that one, too. I was just trying to find... I mean, Matt Damon seemed kind of out of place in the role... the beginning or in the original. And it just almost felt like it was a big name for a big name. And that was about it. And so I decided to do that and went with a big name for no reason. So I went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He was on the short list.
I think that he would be basically the same thing that Matt Damon was. A familiar face in the midst of all of this giant war epic movie. And so when you finally get to him and say, hey, I think we found him. And then he turns around and it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. We as the audience would know, yep, you found him. Good. Yeah. Thanks for saving Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And, but again, Matt Damon in the role brought some humanity to it and how he reacted to finding out why they were there and what they went through to just come and get him and how he kind of turned that around to a point. I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt would offer that same type of humanity and that same type of, I don't know, life lessons, not really the right thing, but just that poeticness to the end of the movie to sort of bring it back to what this movie is trying to say, and not just the war, but the humanity behind the war.
Yeah. You know, I just looked up Matt Damon's IMDb record, and this is just a year after Good Will Hunting. So, like, filming-wise, this could have filmed while that was filming or right before. You know, I don't know. Like, so as far as, like, it being a, like, the name for namesake, I think that... It feels that way now because of how many movies he's been in, but it doesn't feel that way looking at the timeline of it necessarily.
I can confirm that it isn't. When filming started on this, it was offered to Edward Norton, who turned it down, and then it was given to Matt Damon because at the time he was a relative unknown, and Spielberg wanted an unknown.
Got it. Little did he know.
Yep.
So I was completely way off.
No, that's all right. It feels that way now, but... I think back then it wouldn't have done so. So I think, you know, I think you're not wrong. You're just not right.
I do like the idea of that character being somebody that we recognize and are familiar with.
They would have to play it a little bit differently. I mean, you can't see his face super well in the scene, like the reveal scene. So, you know, I think it could still work either way. But yeah.
Sure.
And I think JGL could do wonders with that.
He looks like a soldier.
Yeah.
I will pass it on to Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I also wanted to go with a friendly face, if not a familiar face. but I think for a lot of people, my pick would be A Familiar Face. And I went with Nicholas Holt because, he's just awesome.
Yep. I almost picked him.
Yeah, he's been everywhere lately, but especially in Mad Max Fury Road, and which I still need to see. But he's also in the... Young Hank McCoy / Beast in the X-Men films and Zombie Number One in the Warm Bodies. But just a great actor. And he's lovable. What can you say? He's lovable.
Totally. he's substantial, but yet very kind-faced and gentle at the same time. I think he's one of the few people that can do both of those things really well. Like his casting as Hank McCoy was just absolutely spot on. Oh, yeah. I don't know who did that, but good job you. Cause that was absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Cheers to you.
Yep. Hollywood casting director.
All right. Let's move on to Andy.
I also wanted someone very familiar I went with Nicholas Holt too.
Yay.
But actually this character was the hardest for me to cast by leaps and bounds. And I'm still not entirely sure that I'm pleased with my pick. I wanted someone, my wife and I were both going through a long list of actors. I think she actually pulled up a list. It was just kind of thumbing through them and showing me thumbnails of actors. And most of the people that she was choosing were too pretty. I didn't want this actor to be pretty. I wanted this actor to be Kyle, I think you described him as America.
Yeah.
I wanted him to be very average looking. That was, I think this character can go a lot of different ways in terms of being someone who there's so much emotion and tension built up around this character before you ever see him. The reveal is very important. So do you want someone who is, just beautiful and gorgeous? No, I'd like someone who is very, all these things have been built up and said about this person. Why is he worth this mission? Why is everything? And then to have someone who's just kind of very average, can almost ramp up the tension even more. Like, we're doing this for that guy. He's a schlub. He's a schmo. Big deal. And not to say that Nicholas Holt is a schlub because he's a very pretty man. So really, if we could dirty him up a little bit, I think it'd be great. And I think he could do it.
I like it.
And his middle name is Caradoc, which is kind of
what?
Caradoc.
Caradoc? Wow.
No. Caradoc.
Wow. Apparently his middle name is a castle.
Yeah.
I was unaware of this.
Yeah. So
looking at some of the, go ahead.
Oh, Sam, I'm happy that your pick for America is a Brit.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking at pictures of him on IMDb, he looks like Benedict Cumberbatch Jr.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. A little
he
bit.
He does a little bit. Yeah.
And this, this character, I don't want to go off on too long a rant. I'll keep it short. He's a soldier. I mean, he's a paratrooper. He's a tough guy. He's been doing everything that, he's probably just as tough as these Rangers are that are coming to get him.
Yeah. I mean, when you meet him, he blows up a tank with a bazooka.
You obviously don't want someone who at first glance, even if he is dirty and fatigued, you're like, come on, there's no way he's an elite U.S. soldier. So I'm not saying that I don't think Nicholas Holt could do that, because I think he could. He's just that picture on his profile picture on IMDb is too pretty.
But then you can look just a little bit down on IMDb and see that picture of him from Mad Max.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. Good point. So there we go. All right. I feel better about my pick now.
Good.
Looking at that hideous visage. So Lee, wrap it up.
Well, I wanted someone who was a little more believable as someone that you totally believe made it through airborne training, which was the toughest training in the Army at the time. And, someone who had charisma and yet, an emotional range. So I went with Sam Claflin, who I believe I've mentioned before. Nice. But he plays Finnick in the Hunger Games movies.
Nice. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know much of what else he's been in, but I really like him in that role.
Yeah. I think he's a great actor, and I think he's just at the beginning of his career, and I think he's going to be moving on to bigger things. So
yep.
I like him for this role.
I could certainly see that. Looks like he's in the one of the upcoming Star Wars spinoff movies, Rogue One.
Yep.
So that's cool. Rumored, at least.
Rumored, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Nice. Good pick. He's beautiful. So he's the best of America, maybe.
And he's also a Brit.
Yep. Funny. Awesome. Great. At least we didn't pick any Germans.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Okay, no, I think we're okay. All right, so for the role of Private Ryan... Thought about it.
I'm sure Emil Hirsch is not German at all.
No, no, certainly not. In the role of Private Ryan, originally played by Matt Damon, I went with Logan Lerman. Jer went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Mark went with Nicholas Holt. Andy went with Nicholas Holt. And Lee went with Sam Claflin. For our last major role, we've got Captain John Miller, originally played by Tom Hanks. Jer and Andy, I think you guys are tag teaming this one, yeah?
Yeah, for whatever reason, we decided that we would both do this.
Jer, you could possibly go wrong.
Nothing at all. Jer, go ahead and read the description.
I will read the description that is written and penned by Andy's deft hand. Captain Miller is a soldier who cares about his men, his objective, and the larger mission of the war, to the detriment of his squadron. He's a flawed character who makes questionable decisions and shows that in that war, even the leaders were just regular guys who were trying to do what they thought was best and ultimately to get home.
That's pretty good reading. I like that.
Thank you. Yeah,
one word is wrong, so you have to start over.
Oops. Yeah. and this time, can you do it as Doc Brown? At half speed?
Don't do it. Move along.
So Andy and I had a brief conversation over the past couple of days off and on about coming up with a consensus pick between the two of us, which started
Not sure why
out,
we did this, but it just happened.
I don't know why, but it worked out. After a few jokes, Andy came with a pick that he brought to me and said, this is who I think we should pick. And I was going to be sending him the identical message with the identical person. So we figured that's probably where we needed to stop the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Andy, that person.
Do I want to harmonize this?
Okay.
You gonna find a the pick that we decided to choose was Nathan Fillion.
Nice.
I was inches away from the same pick, I promise. I was
Nathan Fillion, who actually appears in the original Saving Private Ryan as a different Private Ryan
from Minnesota,
not from Iowa. Who most of us To most of you, he is probably most well-known as Captain Malcolm Reynolds from the Serenity/Firefly series. He's of an age now where I think playing a captain in the army would be much more realistic. Probably actually a little too old, but whatever. He's a captain. He's done the captain thing and done it very well, in my opinion. And now he can do it on Earth.
Yeah.
In the 40s.
Yep. When we were... So Kate and I watched this, and so before he actually showed up, another... characters on screen, she's like, oh, it's Nathan Fillion, and it passed before I could see who it was. I was like, oh, cool. And then later on it was like, actually Nathan Fillion. She's like, wait a minute, that's Nathan Fillion. we had many Nathan Fillion sightings, some true, some false, but that's pretty rad. My concern is that he gets a little eyebrow lifty. I don't know how, you know, shifty, I don't know the best way to put it, but like, he would have to fight that pretty hard. I think he could do it. I just fear that there's the potential for that.
I think that in this role, in this movie, the emotional weight on every character is very palpable. Every character seems beat down to a large degree. And I would like to carry that through into the remake, which I think would solve a lot of the eyebrow questions. because in like the Serenity Firefly franchise, there's always a little bit of a wink and a nod there that allowed Malcolm Reynolds to do those kinds of mannerisms and things like that, that wouldn't exist in this film. And I would like to see him even less militarized than his other characters, so that he really is like, he's a believable high school teacher who happened to, you know, be drafted and commissioned as a captain, who's had his training, but he's not a soldier. He's a teacher, and he's trying, you know, he runs into situations where he doesn't feel like he can make, like, he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. And he's just got to, you know, flip a coin and do what he thinks is right. And he knows that either direction is going to get somebody killed, whether it's one of his own men or another, you know, an American troop who's just a mile down the road behind him or something like that. And I like that aspect of it. I like the moment at, when they attack, right before they attack the machine gun nest, when the sergeant is kind of not so subtly questioning him about this plan, and maybe he can take the place of one of them. And he just snaps at him. He's just like, shut up. And I like that it's a very honest moment of humanity where he clearly seems like he's at the end of his rope trying to make this decision, and he doesn't need people to question him. He just needs people to do what he says and go with it.
Yeah.
And I want that in this to carry forward in this character, and I want Nathan Fillion to have that kind of always at the end of his last frayed nerve.
Yeah. Well put. I like that. Good explanation.
I see Nathan Fillion as a lot of the pieces that when you look back and watch the original Saving Private Ryan now, and you kind of realize that Tom Hanks was really just a school teacher that happened to be pretty good at leading men, which I guess makes sense because he was a school teacher. But when you really kind of looked at it, it was him doing what he thought was going to get these people that he cared about home. And it was that school teacher mentality of these are the charges that have been put into my responsibility, and I'm going to do the things that I need to do, as grisly as they might be, to get them home safe. And I think that in a similar but more, like you said, kind of tongue-in-cheek manner, but in a very similar manner, I think that was a lot of what Malcolm Reynolds' character was on Firefly. Mm-hmm. And so I could see a lot of that translating over very well, and just, you know, like Andy said, putting a bit more or a lot more weight on it, but still keeping a lot of that mentality.
Good co-pick, guys.
Yay, us.
Yay. Nice.
Good job, all right, you. Lee.
Thanks. Lee, who you got?
Well, I wanted an actor who could convey that sense of, I guess, Captain Miller. There's this conflict going on where he's very much an effective combat commander. I mean, he's a company commander in the Rangers. That's not an easy position to take. And yet he's horrified by war and he doesn't want to be there at all. So there's that kind of conflict going on. And because of that, he's sort of a shell of a man because of the decisions he's had to make. So I wanted someone who could have that sort of cloud hanging over their heads the entire time. And I went with Guy Pearce.
That'll nice. Be haunted.
Yeah, no kidding. I like that.
So yep. And just thinking of, I had one of those moments of, you know, where you think of a scene with your actor in it, and it's when they're in the church and the guys are sort of sleeping and talking, and they just have a couple hours to get some rest before they move out. And, you know, he's talking to Sergeant Horvath about, you know, how he justifies putting his men in danger because, you know, he figures that for every man who dies under his charge, he saves the lives of 20 others or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 10 others, I think. Yep.
Yeah. So, and that's the scene that I kind of thought of with Guy Pearce and how he could really pull that off.
Yeah. I haven't seen much of him of late, in a way that makes me miss him. So I would like to see that.
Definitely. And I think he's the right age.
A real skis ball in Lawless a couple of years back.
Oh yeah.
But, yeah, that's my pick, Guy Pearce. Nice. And moving on to Mark.
Okie dokie. Like, even just a few minutes ago, I was so close to picking Nathan Fillion. But ultimately, it was just too much wink for me.
Yeah. And
I needed to be a little more serious. Yeah, yeah. For Miller, I was really looking for that combination of authority and humanity, where, I mean, he needs to be the decisive leader of the platoon, but he also needs to be very relatable. I mean, you know, the soft eyes, the easy nature with his troops. He's got to both command the men and be one of them. And I went through a really, really long list of names and rejected all but one. That name was Jeremy Renner.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought about him too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we know
Jeremy. I thought about him in other roles.
Yeah. And we know Jeremy Renner because he's Hawkeye in the Marvel Universe. He was in Mission Impossible, couple movies. He was Aaron Cross in The Bourne Legacy. But most importantly, he was Hansel in The Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
It's a most natural importantly, role.
A full body of work.
Oh, yes.
I've gone from really liking Jeremy Renner to liking him a little bit less, but I think Age of Ultron has gotten me back on the Renner wagon a little bit.
Yeah, Age of Ultron did good things for Hawkeye and Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, and it was mostly just that I like him less as a person now than I once did. He was kind of mysterious for a while and didn't really talk, and now he talks a lot, and he's not a very good talker, so I really just kind of wish he'd shut up and stop being kind of an a-hole. But I like him as an actor, and I think I think he would do all right with it. But I just, you know, as long as he doesn't do too much press around it, I think we'll be okay.
So, Kyle, as long as we're on the subject, who would you pick?
Well, I made either the greatest pick or the worst pick of all time in this role.
Can't wait.
Get unbelievably confusing or be the perfect tie-in to the previous. I chose Matt Damon for John Miller. I think he's got the gravitas. I think he can lead. I think he can be personable. I could see him as a teacher. I mean, he checks off every box of the role. He's got that star power. I also want to give a shout out to Tom Hanks in the original, because that was a really, really wonderful, well-varied, well-rounded portrayal. It wasn't a thankless role, nor was it over the top. He played it just very true, which was pretty amazing. I thought he did a really wonderful job. So I think Damon is about as close as we can get to that nowadays, of that well-rounded, you know, human being who can do just about anything because he sets his mind to it, not because he's a superhero, not because of anything other than just that he is strong-willed and can make things happen because of that. So, yeah. So, again, either we do it and he gets picked and everyone's like, so did Private Ryan become Captain Miller? So assuming that people are confused by, like, transforming humans, then, you know, if we can get past that, I think it's going to be really, really good. So, I don't know. We'll see. I think it's a good pick. It might just be a terrible pick.
I like the idea of transforming humans better than the idea of transforming robots.
Yeah. I think it's a brave pick. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lump this in with your Klaus Kinski kind of category.
Oh, it's not that bad. Come on.
Brave pick.
It's not that weird.
I purposefully had to, like, keep myself in check from not picking any Band of Brothers actors.
Oh, sure.
And, that's funny because now we've got two from the
original.
Which
leaves one actor in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce.
Yeah, I almost picked Ron Livingston.
I almost did too. I thought of him.
Interesting.
But
yeah. We'll see. We'll see how the voting goes. I don't know. Maybe pick me. All right. So in the role of Captain John Miller, originally played by Tom Hanks, both Jer and Andy in a co-pick went with Nathan Fillion. Lee went with Guy Pearce, Mark went with Jeremy Renner, and I went with Matt Damon. So that does it for the major. That does it for the major characters. Now let's move on to the minor characters. First of which is Private Ryben.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, tell us about Private Ryben.
Yes, sir. Private Richard Ryben is the Browning gunner in the platoon, and so brings a bigger gun to the gunfight. He is cynical and decisive for better and for worse, but the better makes for a pretty strong upside if he's fighting alongside of you. Apparently, he's from Brooklyn.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Ed Burns from Brooklyn? What?
You're that, or that's where he bought his jacket.
He got it really cheap in Philly.
If you look really close, one of the O's is actually a Q. Yeah. I didn't really want anything different than the original portrayal by Edward Burns. By the way, for the longest time, I thought that it was actually Brian Williams from NBC Nightly News. But
if you asked him, he would say it was him. So
yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, come on! The joke just teed itself up. I just hit it.
It was
too,
right
too
there.
Soon. Too
no,
soon?
No, not at all.
I love Brian Williams. He can do whatever he wants.
Except
and
that.
And says whatever he wants.
I wouldn't want to do anything different from Edward Burns' original portrayal. Ryben was mouthy and sarcastic, but he wasn't overly so. Like, the portrayal wasn't over the top at all. Like, he was pretty even-keeled. It was just saucy. You know, it's not like what you get in the Disney Channel these days. That being said, the actor that I picked to do exactly the same thing is Jesse Eisenberg.
Interesting.
Because I think he could do that saucy really, really well.
I think he can do the saucy really well. I'm having a hard time with the physical presence.
And we'll wait until after Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. So did you see the Comic-Con trailer that just came out?
No, not yet.
Oh, my God. He's a really weird Lex Luthor. He's got, like, long hair. And I don't know if that's just a wig. Nope.
I saw a poster where he is Q-Ball.
Not in this trailer.
Yeah, I mean, he'll get there eventually. I mean, you can't not have a bald Lex Luthor. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, the physicality I have some issues with, but the sass, I am 100% behind. I'm a sass supporter of Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, the way I figure is that if you can get Tobey Maguire to be halfway ripped for Spider-Man, then you can do pretty much anything.
Fair enough. Good point. Andy's got a...
You want some of this?
No, I'll save it until my time.
Fair enough. Ooh, in your time. Mm-hmm. Let's move on, not to Andy, but to Jer.
Yes, I'm going to be speaking upon Private Jackson. I don't know if that's proper grammar, but that's what I'm doing.
Not at all.
Private Jackson was originally played by Barry Pepper. And Private Jackson was an American sniper from West Fork, Tennessee. And he served in the 2nd Rangers Battalion of the United States Army. And he was part of Miller's squad, a devout Christian who mixed his sharpshooting skills with lining up kill shots. And of the platoon, or a squad, I guess is probably the better word for it, of the squad in Saving Private Ryan, he is easily my most favorite character. And spoiler alert, when he died, that was the one death that I was like, oh.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, yeah. Me too.
Agreed.
And I just really like his character and how Barry Pepper played him, and he was just the right mix of you wanted to root for him, but he was just such a badass at the same time. And man, was he a proficient sniper.
Yeah. There's something sexy about competence, and he was like extraordinarily competent. Like the scene that I loved was when he was up in the bell tower that he was sniped from towards the end, and he was giving the, you know, kind of the hand signals, like, you know, five battalions. Mm-hmm. And that scene was so well done and so great.
And then and that was when you realized that he's not just a guy that shoots a gun really good. Like, he's a soldier, and he is a good soldier.
Yeah, strategy. Yep.
It was interesting to watch in that scene right before he dies, where he's firing very rapidly, but he's a lefty shooter, and yet he ejected the casing and advanced the next round with his left hand, which meant that he had to reach across the rifle
to the right side of the rifle.
And I just thought that was interesting that was how he trained himself to shoot rather than taking his right hand. I guess that would have meant taking his right hand off the barrel.
Yes.
So he couldn't do that, but that just seemed awkward.
It just so happens that the gun is not designed for left-handed people, because the righty would shoot, and then it would be the same thing, but it's just not, you know, it's like a left-handed guitar strung the opposite way kind of thing. Yeah.
But also, as a sniper, I wouldn't want to lose my steadying hand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was still very good.
I also like that they showed him missing in that. You know, you're seeing it through his scope. Like, that was interesting. It wasn't just like 100% kill shot, so that it felt very real. You know, he's not superhuman. He's just a guy in unbelievably stressful times doing what he's supposed to do and probably going to die for it. You know, I thought that was really, really interesting that they showed, you know, probably like a third misses, which for a sniper feels like cheating. But I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
I also like the scene at the beginning with when Caparzo dies or gets shot by the sniper, and he's just kind of laying in the weeds with the rain coming down, just kind of trying to find this guy up in the loft and kind of reverse snipering him. And that, it was just a very well shot scene. And I loved all you saw really of his personality was just the quoting the Psalms and, you know, just being who he was and believing that he was, you know, the better shooter at that moment. And got proven right. But man, at the end when he looks down through a scope and sees that tank barrel raising up, like, just heart in your stomach.
Yep.
Have we actually heard your pick yet, Jared?
No, I was just going to say.
I'm not going to tell you.
The Barry Pepper Appreciation Society sponsors this episode.
I picked Barry Pepper. I wouldn't actually be against that. But I chose Norman Reedus for much of the same reasons that Barry Pepper did well.
I'm intrigued. Yeah. That would make for a little bit more menacing Jackson.
I think that he could. I think he could soften that up, but I don't think that he needs to soften it too much. I like menacing a little bit, but I also like that just the combination of who that character was.
I don't know. I felt like the original portrayal was pretty menacing in its own right.
Southern boy that you know believed he was doing God's work in the army, and I think Norman Reedus could do that a lot too, but also be a badass soldier.
You just want him to play his character from Boondock Saints, don't you?
A little bit of that. Cut his hair, give him a little bit of a army coup cut or whatnot. And, yep.
But you want to root for him like you root for Daryl in Walking Dead.
Exactly. Yep.
Totally. Good pick.
Just a piece of trivia about the character of Jackson. He's based on a character or a real guy from the book Band of Brothers named Shifty Powers, who was the company sharpshooter.
That's an awesome name.
His name is Shifty Powers?
Is maybe the best name ever.
That's awesome.
It was Daryl Powers, but everyone called him Shifty.
Nice. Daryl Shifty Powers.
Yep.
Killer.
You guys can be start my superhero me Shifty movie. If you want.
Deal. Shifty Nelson.
Can't tell if that's a superhero name or a porn star name.
Both.
It's both.
They're not mutually exclusive.
All right, Kyle, tell us about Sergeant Horvath.
Sergeant Horvath, originally played by Tom Sizemore, is the guy who you want to have your back in a war, but you probably don't want to ask him what he had to do to keep you both alive. Tom Sizemore can kind of drive me nuts, but this was maybe like peak Sizemore for me. I just thought he was so perfect in this.
He was great.
He's like surly, but loyal. He's strong but vulnerable. I mean, he just like he did everything and balanced it so well, but he ultimately is just kind of like a really tough dude that will do anything to move along. The scene towards the end where like he's literally throwing everything at the soldiers shooting at him.
They throw helmets at each other, throwing
guns at each other. That is so great. And it provided a little bit of levity in a scene that doesn't seem like it should have it, but it somehow worked perfectly. So I really loved that performance. And it's weird. I couldn't find like a Sizemore-esque actor now. Maybe I just didn't try hard enough, but I found somebody that I think would do a good job of that. And is mostly just kind of how I described, like he'll do anything to keep himself and his platoon alive. And this person I think could do it. And Mark, this harkens back to your war pick. I picked Gerard Butler for this. Now I know he's not American. I think he can do it in an American accent just fine.
I just think that
he would, the intensity, he would have that kind of thing where like, I wouldn't want to mess with him, but at the same time, like I would want him to be in my crew. So yeah, Gerard Butler, hopefully with some good dialect coaching.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with the spirit of it. I think he's got great intensity. He could probably yell a little bit less in this one than in 300, but, I've yet to hear him do anything except for a Scottish or a little bit Irish.
So I think he can do it.
Let's go the Jean-Claude Van Damme route and make him Creole.
Or Scottish or Irish.
That's a terrible
idea.
Do the
Schwarzenegger
overdub him like in Hercules.
Overdub his old voice from Hercules in New York.
Oh boy. That's another terrible idea. All right. So that's mine. Andy, on to you.
Private Mellish. Private Mellish is Jewish and he is not afraid to tell the Nazis as much. He also does not tolerate Corporal Upham, despite being outranked by him. Eventually, he grows to trust Upham with the task of being Johnny on the spot with the 30 cal ammo. This was a mistake. Private Mellish's death was easily the hardest thing for me to watch.
I still can't watch
it's that. It's just, that's oh, that yeah. was the scene where my heart was pounding and I just felt, I was clenching the arm of the couch. It's just, it's awful. Just awful. He was originally played by Adam Goldberg. Here's where my umbrage towards Mark's minor character pick was, because Jesse Eisenberg was my very close second pick for this character. Because Jesse Eisenberg, to me, seems much more...
That's not my fault, dude.
Yes, it is. No, it's not. This character seems much more able to play a little mousy character. I just can't see Jesse Eisenberg as anything other than like Woody Allen's grandson. I just can't. And I don't see that in the character of Private Private Brooklyn, whatever his name was.
Rayburn.
So anyway, that was my umbrage of that pick. But anyway, however, I'll happily accept the cascade of umbrages that are going to come my way when I announce this pick.
I'm ready.
Because I went with Andy Samberg for this one.
Oh, good Lord.
So
umbrage.
Yeah. I deserve it. I deserve every bit of it. Here's what I think. Here's what I would like to see. If any character brought any sort of levity to the film, it would be Private Mellish, in my opinion. Not to say that he was a comic relief character at all, because he wasn't. But he was a wisecracking character who had just these very brief moments in the film that, you know, elicited maybe a little bit of a chuckle, a slight smile. I would like that brought into this character. Obviously, we'd have to do a heck of a lot to turn Andy Samberg into a soldier. I think it could be done. I trust in the Samberg. So that's my pick.
I trust Andy Samberg for a lot of things.
I don't at all.
Yeah, I don't trust him for this one.
Well, that's not my problem, as you said. There we are. Now, Lee, I believe you have a double pick for us.
I do. Erwin Wade, played by Giovanni Ribisi, is a platoon medic. In lieu of a rifle, he carries a first aid kit and is profoundly affected when a soldier dies. He's weary from his experiences, but still has an innate need to help others. Wade is the nice guy of the crew. It's appropriate that he's not carrying a rifle because you can't picture a guy like this killing anybody else. It kind of like up him in that way. But he's also the guy that it's clear that everybody likes him. He's just universally well-liked. So I wanted someone who the audience would feel very sad when he dies. I was actually very sad when Wade died. So I picked Josh Hutcherson. Because I can't see him as a soldier. But I can see him helping others. So that was my pick for Wade.
Can I interrupt Lee with a quick history question? Did the medics carry any firearms at all?
No, they weren't allowed to.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
By the Geneva Conventions, they were not allowed to.
Interesting.
Was it then just assumed that you didn't target them
as exactly. A fighting it was also, force? Yep. It was also against the Geneva Conventions to kill a medic.
Wow. What a effed up thing war is.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Don't kill them, but kill everyone else.
But how on the Normandy Beach invasion, I mean, I can't. The medics must have been killed left and right.
Trust me, it didn't stop the Japanese from shooting our medics.
Huh.
And it didn't. And most of the Germans, it didn't stop them from shooting our medics.
Huh.
So it's, you know, it's a rule, but kind of hard to enforce on a battlefield.
Yeah, exactly. You have referees out there.
You know what else is a rule? Don't kill people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. I think I heard that somewhere.
But
sorry, Lee, carry on.
That's all right. And my other pick was Adrian Caparzo. Caparzo is a tough, war-hardened private who has a good heart. Ironically, it's his caring ways that get him killed. Originally played by Vin Diesel, in the only role that I've ever liked Vin Diesel in. I wanted someone who was very, you know, had a very tough exterior, but I thought could dig down and, you know, you could see a sensitive side of him. So I went with Charlie Hunnam, who people would know from Sons of Anarchy and Pacific Rim.
I like that pick a lot. That's a really good.
Yep, I thought he'd be.
Vin Diesel did bring a surprising amount of heart to this role.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked him in it, and, you know, it made his death very tragic. But he gets really upset when the Germans are shooting a runner who's already on the ground and wounded. And he also wants to help the French family who's kind of stuck in that blown out house. So yeah, I like the character of Caparzo a lot.
Good picks. I like those.
Thanks.
All right, so that does it for the minor characters, and that wraps up this episode of Remakers, Mark. In part two, we will be discussing the plot, tech, and filmmaking that we would like, or changes that we would like to make to Saving Private Ryan, and that will be released on August 24th. If you'd like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you'll find show notes where you can look up actors, actresses, films, and other links that we have discussed during the show here. You can find us on both Facebook and Twitter at username mathishardnet, and you can contact us via the website mathishard.net as well. So, gentlemen, war is hell. Thankfully, podcast recording is not. It's much less stressful, and we're all alive, so yay to that. That's good. Until the next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.